Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe. You're listening to the voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. Real Talk is the show that's here every Tuesday at lunchtime with you to ask or seek answers to questions large and small. Today's question is more about information, really. In the state of Washington, people who are incarcerated accrue debt. They're called legal financial obligations. They accrue debt for their housing, for court costs, for victims' fees, and all kinds of other fees at a rate of 12% interest. And we're here to find out about those legal financial obligations and a change that the Washington State Legislature has made in those LFOs to provide some relief for people who are formerly incarcerated. To help us understand that, we have with us retired attorney Bailey DeYoung. Welcome.
Hello.
Vashon Island activist with Stand Up for Racial Justice, Janie Starr. Welcome, Janie.
Hi.
And Threat Brown, who is one of the leaders of an organization called Numbers to Names, which helps formerly incarcerated people re-enter the world. Welcome, Threat.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here with us, all of you. This is a big, complicated question, and it has been keeping people in jail or in dire straits for quite some time. Bailey DeYoung, can you tell us what those legal financial obligations are, have been, and give us an idea of what changes the legislature has currently made?
Sure. Some of the legal financial obligations are fines that are ordered by a court after a person is actually convicted, not just incarcerated, but convicted, and various fees, including DNA testing fee, sheriff's fee, and then costs to reimburse the court for court costs or for defense or prosecution costs, and there are others as well, and then also restitution for victims. And the courts order these things, and as the years have gone by, these kinds of costs have been exacerbated. They've really grown in the last few years. In 2008, a study was issued by a group of professors at the U, funded by the Washington State Minority and Justice Commission, and it talked about how these fees impacted the poor. In 2014, the ACLU and Columbia Legal Services issued a report called Modern Day Debtors Prisons and how these legal financial obligations, as we described them, affected the poor in particular, and it included a number of personal stories. So the bill that just passed the legislature and was signed by the governor a little bit ago, last week, I believe, would change some of the most egregious parts of the legal financial obligation system.
Such as?
It would try to end the practice of jailing people who are unable to pay their LFOs, because right now, if a person doesn't pay, they can be jailed rather easily. This time, now it would be that a person wouldn't be jailed unless it was a willful failure to pay, and willful is defined. But if they're unable to pay, and especially if they're homeless or mentally ill, they can't be cannot be jailed under the new law, the new amendments. There are clearer standards now for ability to pay and indigence. That'll be important because every court has been acting differently. There have been very inconsistent rulings around the state. It'll also reduce the number of mandatory legal financial obligations. So the legislature has said these fees are mandatory, and now those fees, most of those fees will not be mandatory but can be waived by the court.
That's an incredible change.
That's a big, important one. And you mentioned that actually now interest on legal financial obligation accrues at a rate of 12% interest from the date of conviction.
Which is higher than any personal loan
that's correct.
Anyone in the country can get.
That is correct. And that is the general civil interest rate. But it was set, I think, in the 50s, if I remember right, when 12% was something that people did see. But we don't anymore, that's for certain. And that continues even through incarceration.
So is that 12% interest rate staying in the legislation or staying with LFOs?
Well, it's eliminated for everything except restitution.
Okay, restitution being you have to pay back the
victim,
whomever you stole from, or
right. Yeah. The court has to order, can order restitution in the amount that the victim was hurt. Or in some cases, if the victim gets compensated by the victim's fund, then you have to pay the fund back. So there's also now it will convert. You'll be able in more instances to have legal financial obligations converted to community service. And so you can work it off, essentially, doing a community project. And then it also, and this is very important, if people are able to get public assistance, which is pretty darn hard these days, you no longer could LFOs be collected from public assistance. Those are the six main changes in this bill.
I have to say, the original bill itself sounds incredibly draconian, oppressive, and a continuation, I'm sure, of keeping people in jail. Threat Brown, you have been affected by these LFOs. How has it affected your life?
Well, the thing that saves me a lot is due to the short period of time that I was incarcerated, and I had no victims that was in involved in the crimes or the accomplishment crimes that I was involved with, whatnot. So I focus a lot more on friends that I do know that was doing more substantial amount of time, 20 plus years, you know, and now deciding to get out. So what it does to me is that it puts me in a debt that I would have to have owed. But I'm glad that the law has been passed for us to be able to bypass that. But fines, if you get a job, they garnish your checks. It's like almost like child support or something.
Mm-hmm.
They take money from you, you know, because you're able to pay. But then when I'm not in a predicament to where I have a stable, you know, workplace. So now I'm in a position to where it doesn't impact me as hard as it would somebody else. So my primary focus right now is making sure that people that I do know that are incarcerated or are heavily affected by this is to make sure that they get the information that we've been sharing with today so that way they can start better themselves. Because you got people, my debt is probably about between $6,000 to $8,000. But there's a lot of people with 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, and plus thousands of dollars that they owe. And they do not have the means of being able to pay that back.
Do you have any notion of how this change in the LFO laws will help them? Will it reduce that debt by some dramatic amount? And is it retroactive? Does it go to, does it affect folks who are carrying LFO debt now?
People can go back under these amendments that were just signed and ask the court to set it aside, to waive it. And in more cases, you will be able to, you always could go back to court and ask for the court to reconsider, but it was fairly hard to get the court to reconsider. Now you should be able to more easily. But that's one of the challenges that we all face is how are courts actually going to enforce this?
Mm-hmm.
How are they going to put it in play? And that's the job of all of us to make sure that courts do use it across the state.
And could I add to that too as well?
Please.
Because, and could you say your name again?
Bailey.
Bailey. And so just like what Bailey was saying earlier, and we was all speaking about a little earlier, to the point to where people, there's information, like people didn't even know that they can vote as a person that was incarcerated, but now you're no longer a felon. Or you're no longer on probation or parole, so you have the right to vote. And that's been passed a while ago. And people to this present day still do not know that they have the ability to vote. So now even with the LFOs, how do we get the people that are affected by this statute of the law, they still won't know that it's been changed. So they still be, I want to know too, do you believe that if they do not go in to clear that they will continuously be taxed at 12% and continuously have to have some type of payment back to that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see any alternative.
So they have to know that they can do this and go to court to get a change in their LFO debt.
Yeah.
And what's that going to do to the court dockets? If people are informed, if they learn, are the courts going to be amenable to hearing those cases in a timely fashion?
And that's what I would want to know too, is because now when I see if people do, or once people do start realizing that they could go in and get their case reamended or switched around, that becomes a critical component, because I know how the system depends on those LFOs to keep certain cycles and certain payments to go for salaries and budgets. A lot of different things that this money that's coming from these people.
Where does this money go? Do you know?
I mean, it's like court fees, you know, to pay the clerk. I mean, it's a lot of different ways that the money is separated. But I know it's broken up amongst the system. I'm going to just say that.
Yeah, the law sets it out. But the problem is it's not really clear how much money they're actually getting. You know, anecdotally, the courts are not really collecting all that much. Mm-hmm. And, of course, once it goes to collections, the collection agencies do get some income from that as well. So there is a grant that the Washington State Minority and Justice Commission has now that should fund better data collection. And that should enable us to know better what the ramifications are and who's being affected and whether courts are applying the law equally or not.
Well, and Bailey, you have said that this law, legal financial obligations law, has been inconsistent throughout the state, even from county to county. Are these amendments to the law going to require consistency among the counties as well?
Well, they should be applied consistently, but the challenge will be monitoring that and ensuring that it happens so that all the counties are applying it consistently.
Which is a process in itself. So it's still going to be a lot. You know, it's sad to say it's still going to be a lot of stuff going on that's still not beneficial to people that needs that understanding and that clarity of their opportunities. And then again, like you're saying, for King County to have the opportunity to enforce that, and then Pierce County is like, are we going to hold on it? Or, you know, Thurston County or however, some counties do it, some counties don't. It's still stagnated and it's still scattered around.
So a county law could circumvent the state amendment. Is that what you're saying?
County practice, I think, is more likely.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there could be pushback that would be exhibited because there's inconsistency in how it's done.
It sounds to me like there's a huge communication component required in this to that community of people who have come out of jail. Janie Starr, you work with Stand Up for Racial Justice, which is a group here on Vashon Island that has provided some support to folks who are coming out of jail. Do you guys have any plans for or ideas about how you might help folks like Threat to communicate and advocate for those people who need to take some action as soon as possible to get relief?
So first I need to say that actually the group is called Showing Up for Racial Justice, S-U-R-J. And people make that mistake all the time. It was a really conscious decision in response to ableism to have that name. So I'm quite proud of that, actually.
Thank you for showing up.
My pleasure. So just may I give a little background about
Please.
How we are part of this, which is that we started on Vashon just a little over a year ago. And one of the first elements of education for the community that we hosted, along with the Backbone Campaign and the racial equity team of the school district, was to show the film 13th, the documentary 13th. Which woke up a lot of us who don't have legal background and haven't been following what's going on. And a lot of that does come out of our privilege that we haven't needed to know. Out of that, we made the decision to host the group that Threat is involved in, Numbers to Names. And so they came over to a standing room only crowd last fall and blew us all away.
They sure did.
With their knowledge and enthusiasm and commitment and passion and open-heartedness. And one of the things that they talked about were LFOs, legal financial obligations. And I would say that way the majority in that room, including me, had never heard of them. And we were profoundly moved and made the decision to form an LFO team as part of Surge. And so that's how we got involved, first of all, in educating ourselves and being involved by going to Lobby Day, by writing and calling and sitting down with Senator Sharon Nelson and all of the things that groups do. And part of what we have been doing has been to educate people, particularly white people on this island, about these issues, because we think most people don't know about them. And so going forward, the work is hardly done, as both Threat and Bailey have said. We need to educate not just people who might benefit from the new law, but all of the rest of us as well, to what the ramifications are of this change in the law. And so one of the things that we're doing, and Bailey can speak more about that from the interview she was involved with yesterday, is that we want to create some documentation that's readable by people like me who don't know the law, that we can share with Threat and his group of folks and with other people as well. And I'm hoping and knowing that other groups will be doing that and that we'll be working together.
Yeah, it seems to me that the sooner the better, as far as those people who are now carrying this burden are concerned. You're listening to Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon at KVSH 101.9 FM. Vashon Island, Washington. I'm Susan McCabe, your host. I'm here with Bailey DeYoung, Janie Starr, and Threat Brown. We're talking about legal financial obligations imposed on folks who are incarcerated for almost any reason. And we can do this thanks to Windermere Vashon Real Estate, who make all our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. Let me ask you guys, to what level of incarceration does a person have, at what point do these legal financial obligations kick in? If somebody's in for a year,
when you're convicted,
as soon as you're convicted of
any, so it's
of
not
a felony?
Just incarcerated when you're convicted.
Right.
Actually, it's both felony misdemeanors and gross misdemeanors. And some of the biggest question is, there are only a certain number of counties in the state. There are only a certain number of superior courts. There are many, many, what we call, what lawyers call, courts of limited jurisdiction, district courts in the counties and city courts, municipal courts. And all those courts, each one of those judges is a separately elected official who presides over his or her courtroom. And so in those courtrooms, we're worried about the consistency in particular. But it's anyone who's convicted. You don't have to be incarcerated. If you're incarcerated, you may incur more LFOs.
Yeah, right.
But if you're convicted, you can incur fines as well as LFOs.
I guess I can kind of understand the, if you're convicted and not incarcerated, you owe something to society.
Yeah.
You owe something to your victims. You owe something to the state. You owe a fine of some sort. But to my mind, and I think most people would think, that if you're doing time, you've paid your debt. That's the old quote. So this idea of legal financial obligations for people when they come out of having been in jail and supposedly paid their debts to society is shocking.
Oh, and can I add to that too? Because one of the things that I've noticed from being incarcerated is that the wage that we work, in which we work for salary and for pay, we do what would be probably a minimum wage job out here, or sometimes we do what would be probably $15 to $20 jobs out here. We're getting paid like 35 cents starting and to 65 cents an hour.
When you're in jail.
When you're in jail. And so when I look at taxpayers and we look at, you know, however that breaks down, people are using tax monies to house formerly incarcerated people or to keep us confined, right? And so as me being in prison, if I'm working this job, whether it's janitorial job, whether it's a cook, whether I'm doing DNR. So you're doing DNR, and in DNR, you're getting paid to max, I think it's about a dollar an hour to do DNR. So DNR workers, which is, you know, they plant trees and they cut trees and things of that nature, right? So if the wages was being garnished at that rate, at that opportunity, then it could be more beneficial for a person that was incarcerated to be released and have a lot of that paid off. But the sad part about it is that when people use that for majority of the sweat equity, and then you get your change so they don't feel like they're gypping you for the most part, so you can cover your hygiene products and your condiments and things like that. I believe that that would help an incarcerated person if they're in there for 20 years or if they're in there for 4 or 5 years. It would help them know that if I get paid 35 cents an hour, then whatever $12 I would have been paid on the streets, could that money then go into my payments or something? But they won't do that because it'd cover too much, and then it'd kill the fact of being incarcerated workers. So
it would, diminish the savings that they're getting and getting that work done. How is that particular situation impacted by the fact that most of our prisons are now privately owned organizations?
Oh, not in the state.
Private businesses.
Not in the state. Those
not
are federal.
In this state?
Right.
Yeah.
They're
state all federal?
Prisons are operated by the state.
Yeah.
In this state.
Oh. And they're the ones who are imposing LFOs?
The state, yes. Not
the federal prisons. The federal prisons are the ones that are privately owned?
Well, many of them.
Yeah.
Not all, but many.
Are there privately owned federal prisons here in Washington State?
Right. You know? But this is a state law, and this applies to state offenses, state courts.
Oh.
Not to federal.
Yeah.
There's a federal immigration detention facility that is privately run in Tacoma. That's a whole separate animal.
That is a whole separate
animal. I'm not aware of the federal prison system in Washington State.
Okay. Oh, that's really helpful, Bailey. Thank you. That was very helpful information.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get back to the idea of communicating and educating those who might support people who are coming out of jail. How can you go about this? How can those of us who are learning about this and are shocked by the fact help those folks who are coming out of jail?
Well, I'm going to say this. One thing that I've noticed is like when we talk about the communication piece, it is completely frustrating because the judges have communication. They have conversations amongst themselves that people like me, formerly incarcerated, I don't understand what you're talking about. And then you start speaking in favoritism. So do me this favor. I got you. And if you guys work with me on this, and I got you on the next one. You know, those are some of the conversations that are being had with prosecutors and defense attorneys and things of that nature. So what benefit do I have as a person that's sitting here watching two people debate about if I should get released or if I should get the ability or the opportunity for that? You know, so it makes a person that's been incarcerated frustrated and say, I can care less about doing any of that. But the thing, the benefit is, it's like when Surge or when we came to Vashon Island, it's a group of people that, you know, didn't know as much as I knew about LFOs because I just gave up on even trying to focus on them, that decided to take the lead, step up. And so like what Janie say, you know, they got information now. And then Bailey, you guys are saying that you've compiled some information that's like easily readable for a person like myself.
That's going to be our goal, to see that happens.
Right. And that would be beneficial for me and any other formerly incarcerated person, because the legal conversation and the way that they speak on that end is, it ain't nobody, we ain't got time to be trying to figure out that. But if we can break it down to layman's terms, because a lot of people that went in prison illiterate, they came out of prison illiterate, so they still don't know how to read or even comprehend anything that they're going through. And then what we were saying earlier, when you hand them a packet of information to say, this can help you, and they got to read through this and say, I don't even know what this first sentence even relates to. So this becomes throwaway information, which is beneficial to the system, and the system realizes that. But the advocacy from outside resources is what more supports us on our end, you know, if we can make this language a little more comprehensible for us. And then my end is to take the data and information that I am being shared from people that I work closely with and educate myself on how to present this to my community, because I'm heavily involved in the community. And I'm just hyped that I make sure that all this information can get to the right people. And then there are people now, thank you to a program, organizations like Civil Survivors, you know, they're doing a lot of work, you know. And when we talk about the whole legal concepts of things, they're putting in a lot of work. And me as a storyteller from numbers to names, that's what my role is. My role is to make sure that my success and my beings of networking and building relationships with people outside of myself impacts the community with information and gives them the better leverage to grow out of this situation. So that's communication to me. By what you guys are doing, sharing it with me in more layman's terms, then I can share with my community. So that way they can further understand, and then we can bypass all of the judges' conversations on whatever they're talking about.
So you and Numbers to Names become a conduit between those folks who are developing manageable material, understandable material, and those people who need to get it. Because I'm thinking, how do you reach those people? They come out of jail feeling powerless, and they're hiding in the corners somewhere. Yeah. How do you draw them out? I know you can catch them as they're leaving jail. Mm-hmm. Those are the folks who will be fortunate enough to see you when they come out. What about the people who've been out for a while, who can still benefit from the change in the law? Do you have any thoughts about that, Janie or Bailey? How?
Well, that's where the organizations, I think, that support formerly incarcerated people are so important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, during lobby day, we could see them. There were a lot of people from Spokane. Mm-hmm. I did the Time group, and they were all wearing bright orange shirts, and they were talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard people learn about their right to vote
yeah.
right then and there, sitting in groups on lobby day.
Yeah.
You know, they really, the peer education mm-hmm. is so much better. But we need those support materials that they mm-hmm. can point folks
right.
to. So Northwest Justice Project, one of the legal services organizations in Washington, has materials online that people can print off and find out how to go to court and get their LFOs get addressed by mm-hmm. a judge. But right now they need to be updated. So we're mm-hmm. going to be working to see that when that happens, because then we can point folks to that information.
Mm-hmm.
Those folks who need to use it,
those folks who need to be able to
teach it. Janie, you've got something to say here.
I do.
You looked like you did.
I was so engaged. I'm just nodding because I'm learning too. I think something that Threat said is so important, which is using the word storytellers, because you have your own personal story.
Mm-hmm.
I think I know Threat a little bit, and he's an incredibly generous man who doesn't speak much about his own struggles with LFOs, but it's huge. And if you've been in for a few years, it's still huge
right.
because they continue to accrue. And Numbers to Names is trustworthy. It's part of the community. They can reach out and tell stories. And I feel like our job really as Surge is to take the lead mm-hmm. from groups like Numbers to Names. It's not up to us to decide what you all
mm-hmm.
need. It's up to you all to take the lead and for us to help in any way we can. And I think for me, part of Lobby Day that was so interesting, as you alluded to, was Bailey, was who all was in the room.
Mm-hmm.
People who have been incarcerated and people like us who were really new to this effort that had been going mm-hmm. on for a really long time before we knew anything about it. And the ACLU and so all of the legal organizations involved, and it's been a community effort in yeah. the biggest way, and it will have to continue yeah. to be.
Mm. I agree.
Sounds like a tangled web that you're all tackling from various directions.
Mm-hmm. Could I ask one thing, too?
Please.
I mean, add one thing. And another thing to anybody that is formerly incarcerated that's listening to like what I'm saying, from my perspective, is that, you know, a lot of the times I heard Bailey say that she went and she's seen people like speaking amongst themselves. And it's a lot of that, you know, it's politicking. You know, a lot of incarcerated people, they just like to keep it within themselves into their own little circle. We call it cars, you know, so we keep this information in our cars and try to build amongst mm-hmm. ourselves. But what I've realized is that, you know, advocating on behalf of someone with opportunities, because there's certain things that you guys could do from your leverage, you know, to open up a door a lot faster or to build a bridge a lot faster than what I'm able to sit down here and communicate with my team and say, well, we're going to just focus on doing this and doing that. And I'm like, man, we'll sit here forever trying to focus on this and doing that. And we got to go and restudy and do this when we could just leverage with people that's like, we want to be a part of the process too. So how can we get involved and to allow people to get involved? Now, it's one thing when a person want to get involved and make it about themselves. But when people say we want to get involved because we see the need of change needing to be happening, and if we can open up the door a lot faster to allow people to tell their stories or to express that, then formerly incarcerated or still incarcerated about to be released, that's what we need to start doing a lot more of and stop sticking it to our own selves and start reaching out and building this relationship with the opportunity that we need to further the journey a lot faster, you know. So that's important for me.
We have about 1 minute left. Who would like to make the final statement? How do you want to leave this? How can those who are listening to us become involved and help?
Well, there's going to be an article in the Beachcomber upcoming about this and about folks on Vashon who've been involved, including the Quaker Assembly on Vashon. They were also had their own lobby day on this issue. So a lot of people on the island have been involved, but even more, we hope that we can reach out and educate more people about the issue. it's also important for people who may get involved in the criminal justice system in the future to, in as a support, as parents or family, to know about it, because they need to call them on it, make sure that this this law becomes effective.
Thank you, Bailey DeYoung. Janie Starr?
So I just want to encourage people that if they want to learn more and they actually want to get involved, Surge has monthly meetings the third Sunday of every month from 3 to 5 at the Land Trust, and we call in anyone who's listening who is interested in engaging and is committed to undoing racism, because that's a big piece of what we're talking about, even though we haven't focused on it. And then I have a quick PSA, which is that the Backbone Campaign and Vashon Surge are hosting I'm Not Your Negro, the James Baldwin story, next Tuesday at the Vashon Theater from 6 to 8. We get booted immediately at 8, so you don't have to worry about it running over. we'll see the show, and then we'll have a brief discussion after. And the Backbone has been doing these incredible documentaries. And if people come to them, you will learn. I learn so much every time. And I think that's how we get engaged.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. Thank you, Threat Brown, for being here. This has been Real Talk, a show that seeks to answer questions large and small. I'm Susan McCabe, your host. Thanks for listening.